can just a slab you and shame.
With the nature.
Yeah.
Fish. Good, clean.
Maybe he is.
Yeah. Well, they got to sell papers. So.
Something like that.
Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday. It's 2 p.m., July 22nd, 2009. The City Council will come to order in its afternoon session. Carla, the Council Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman? Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. We have two time certains on the agenda. Carla, would you please read the title for time certain resolution, council calendar, item 999.
Did you want to get rid of the consent agenda first?
Oh, did we have one left over?
We put all the consent onto this afternoon when we had four members present.
Okay, let's do the consent agenda. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to pull an item from the consent agenda? All right, Carl, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Now, would you please read the title for time certain council calendar item 999?
Yes. Commend the Governor of Oregon, state legislatures, and Oregon partners for success providing health care insurance for Portland's children.
Commissioner Fritz.
Well, it's wonderful to be here, and it's interesting that the item number is 999, which is the emergency number in England where I come from. And there's been a lot of jokes in the days of rotary telephones when it should have been 111. But it was an emergency that the legislature recognized that we have about 116,000 uninsured children residing here in Oregon. Most are in working families that cannot afford health insurance or do not qualify for state health programs. Lack of health insurance is not only detrimental to a child's health, but also the child's performance in school, with the child more likely to be absent from school than falling behind in their schoolwork. In 2008, Drs. Greg and Marcia Coodley recognized the need to provide children in Portland with health care insurance. In an initiative effort, the Coodleys gathered signatures from Portland residents in the hopes of providing children in Portland public schools with health care insurance. In a response to the Coodleys' efforts, the City Council passed a resolution in 2008 declaring it the policy of the City of Portland that children in Portland deserve basic health care coverage, and that was resolution number 36614. And that was I was charged in January with fulfilling that pledge should the legislature not come through with health care insurance for children. And indeed, the legislature stepped up to the plate in the worst economic crisis that in my lifetime. The 75th Oregon State Legislative Assembly in 2009 passed House Bill 2116, which will expand health care coverage to 80,000 children up to the age of 19, along with 35,000 low-income adults. As a result, 95% of all Oregon children will have health care insurance coverage. In addition to the passing of House Bill 2116, Kaiser Permanente developed a program which now offers free health care insurance via its community benefit program to children in grades K through 6 in Multnomah County Public Schools. And this they did before the legislature acted. So we're here today to recognize the successful efforts of those involved in the creation and passing of the State of Oregon's Health Care Initiative for Children, House Bill 2116. And I'm going to invite some of our honored guests up in groups so that we can say thank you to them, beginning with Representative Mary Nolan, Representative Mitch Greenlick, and Claudia Black from the Governor's Office, and is Kathy Kaufman from Dr. Bruce Goebel's office here? Thank you.
Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here to be recognized. Goodness knows you deserve it.
Representative Mary Nolan, who was House Majority Leader this session, was an advocate on many of Portland's top legislative priorities, including House Bill 2116. Mary should be recognized for the overall success of the legislative session despite the difficult challenges the legislature faced in trying to pass good policy in an economic recession. Representative Nolan negotiated with healthcare providers about the funding mechanisms in House Bill 2116 and taking the bill to the House floor helped to persuade many other state representatives to vote for the bill. Representative Mitch Greenlick, as chair of the House Healthcare Committee, demonstrated determination and expertise taking on the major healthcare challenges of the state. He is to be commended not only for his efforts to pass House Bill 2116, but also as a companion to healthcare reform, House Bill 2009. As chair of the House Healthcare Committee, Representative Greenlick was the architect of healthcare reform, held 6 public hearings and 14 work sessions on a bill that will significantly improve healthcare, the way healthcare is provided in Oregon. And we know that both of you have worked on this project, not just in this legislature, but for many years. And we appreciate you greatly. We also have before us Claudia Black, who is the Governor's Health and Human Services Advisor and is Health Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski. Claudia's work on the legislation began before the beginning of the legislative session. Healthcare for all kids in Oregon has been a priority for Governor Kulongoski for 2 legislative sessions. Your staff's presence was essential in this process. Thank you so much. And Kathy Kaufman is going to be the manager of the Oregon Office of Healthy Kids beginning August 3rd. Prior to being selected for this position, Kathy was the Policy and Communications Director for Children First for Oregon, an organization that advocates for children and their families by shaping public policies statewide. Kathy also served on the steering committee of the Social Welfare Action Alliance, co-directed the Portland Green Map Project, and volunteered for Start Making a Reader Today and the Community Alliance of Talents. So we're very grateful to you for all of your work and wondered if any of you would like to say a few words.
Commissioner, if I might, Mary Nolan, state representative for the district in which City Hall stands, as well as most of Southwest Portland within Multnomah County. I think it's important that we remember that the work we did to extend health care for children in Oregon and begin to expand for low-income adults. We did not make as much headway with adults as we did with kids because kids were our priority. Is not only about their current health, their readiness for school, but it is also about protecting Oregon's economy on 2 levels. First of all, what we did will provide about $700 million a year in Oregon to provide health care, and we'll be doing that by employing Oregonians doing it. It keeps money here that would otherwise be going to other states, employing people in other states to take care of other states' children. So it's not only about health care, but it's also about employing Oregonians in delivering that health care. And the other way that this is a big boost for our economy here in Oregon is by providing this kind of preventive health care. We help contain the cost of private health insurance provided by Oregon employers to their employees in a way that makes it possible for them to continue to do that and stay competitive. So, Commissioner, while the most urgent motivation for us was around kids and making sure that they have access to health care, this is also an enormous step forward on behalf of our economy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to comment. First, I'd really like to commend you all for taking the responsibility for health care of kids. I thought that was a tremendously courageous thing without any sense, perhaps, of how you were going to actually do it if we failed. And I think stepping out into that void was a very important symbolic thing to do, and I very much admired it. The second I'd like to say there are 4 of us sitting here representing 4 pieces of the action, but this was a bipartisan, bicameral effort that included the work of dozens, scores, maybe hundreds of folks putting input into helping keep moving this ball forward. And we always understood it was going to take 36, 18, and 1 to get the votes, and people like Senator Lori Montes Anderson and Senator Johnson and Senator Bates were very much involved with us right from the very beginning. Our caucus was universally behind it from the start. The governor's staff was quite incredible, except they continued to call it Healthy Kids when when I continued to insist it was something else. And I noticed they've won, so I'm a good loser. And certainly Dr. Goldberg was quite extraordinary being there with us right from the beginning, in both in the substantive process of pointing out how we could really make these things work, and then being active in the negotiations as we moved toward get funding. So I'm really happy to be here representing, like that television commercial, the big bunch of folks back there who were very much involved in this process, and especially Tom Burns, who was the legislative person who, at the end, when we had a 613-page bill, could tell you what was on page 42 and on page 355, and that was quite an amazing effort. But thank you for noticing.
So Kathy Kaufman is representing Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who's the State of Oregon's Department of Human Services Director, and was unable to be here today, but indeed was a great supporter.
Hi, I'm Claudia Black, and I'm Governor Kulongoski's Health Policy Advisor.
Claudia, could you move that? There you go.
Sorry.
Thank you.
The governor sends his greetings. He wishes he could have been here today to celebrate with all of us. As you know and as you've heard, that providing all children in Oregon with access to affordable health care has been a goal of the governor for some time. And we've had setbacks along the way, but he's never let that deter him from the goal. With the passage of House Bill 2116, that goal has become a reality. By the time the governor leaves office, all children in Oregon will have access to health care. I appreciate your kind words, and I would definitely echo those of Representative Greenlick in recognizing what a supreme effort this was on the behalf of so many people that were involved, and particularly the legislature and the leadership, Representative Nolan, Representative Greenlick, who are here today, and the group of four, and then all the other people who took this to heart and really, really passionately care about kids. So on behalf of the governor, I want to thank everyone for their role in it. And I'll just say that we are thrilled about this situation. We're looking forward to working with all of you and all of the stakeholders on implementing the Healthy Kids program in Oregon. You notice I do say Healthy Kids. I would acknowledge that Representative Greenlick made sure that Healthy Kids was not in statute. The program's called Healthy Kids, but in statute it has a different term. And I also want to acknowledge Kathy Kaufman, who is going to be leading that effort, and we're just thrilled to have her part of the team. Thank you.
Thank you, and please convey the council's appreciation to the governor. My staff was looking forward to working with Kathy on implementation and getting families to sign up. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
We have a second. Yeah. We do have some other folks that I'd like to recognize and ask to come up. Multnomah County Commissioner Jeff Kogan, who, as Commissioner Saltzman's former chief of staff, played a key role in creating the Children's Investment Fund. Commissioner Kogan is also a leader in putting Portland ahead on the green building movement and serves as the chair of the city's Human Rights Commission. Representative Tina Kotek, who is House Majority Whip and is also very committed to this process, is not able to be with us today, and neither is State Senator Betsy Johnson or State Senator Alan Bates, but we greatly appreciate their participation. I would also like... Dr. Greg and Marcia Coodley here? Oh, good. You're hiding. If you'd like to come up too, please, Dr. Coodley, that's great. I couldn't see you behind the pillow.
Where's my paper for that? Why don't you have a seat in the middle, Doctor, so we can get you
This is Dr. Greg Coodley. And the Coodleys won the Spirit of Portland Award with their Fano Creek Clinic in 2004 as Portland's Small Business of the Year. Fano Creek Clinic also exemplifies sustainability, winning the 2005 Best Award for Energy from the city's Office of Sustainability. Drs. Greg and Marcia Coodley are valued community members in Southwest Portland, and they have shown that they care about children and healthcare all over Portland. The Fano Creek Clinic not only provides excellent healthcare, but also annual recognition and grants for outstanding teachers, volunteers, and public employees. Thank you so much for all you do for Portland and Portland's children.
Thank you.
And thank you for, as the representative said, really setting this the stage for the successful legislative session in both of your work. Care to say anything with us?
Well, I want to briefly say, first of all, what a terrific accomplishment the representatives and senators and the governor pulled together by actually making this happen. And we're, as a community and as a state, really grateful. I also want to acknowledge that City Council took the risk of putting themselves on record saying, we're going to do this if they don't. And that was a risk. And I think it also was an important marker, and it helped the entire debate statewide. And then I just want to say the reason the City Council did that is because of this man right here, Dr. Greg Coodley, who, in my view, is a true citizen activist of the very best sort, who was personally passionate enough to spend hundreds and hundreds of hours of his time, raised all sorts of money, gathered signatures, and really worked to put this on the city's agenda. And I think all of us are really benefiting from that. So thank you, Dr. Coodley.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you. That's very kind. I know my wife wanted to be here, but we couldn't get childcare at short notice. So I really appreciate the city put themselves on record in support of this, and also the wonderful job that the legislature had done, because it's so many years we've been waiting for this kind of thing to happen, and it's wonderful to have it happen, especially in the midst of what's happening economically. And I think that took a lot of effort on the part of the legislature, and I really want to thank them for a wonderful job, and thank you guys for support.
Yeah, thank you both. Thanks very
so much.
Much.
And indeed, our entire delegation from Portland was very, very helpful. I testified before Representative Greenlee's committee, and both Representative Jules Copel Bailey and Representative Nick Carl were staunch supporters. And we're all committed to helping get all of the children in Multnomah County and Washington and Clackamas and every child in the state signed up for this. Want to also mention that Dave Hunt, the Speaker of the House, and our government relations lobbyists were absolutely fantastic. Martha Pellegrino is here with us today, and Dave Barenberg, Dan Bates, and Matt Jaffe, who cannot be here today, were just splendid and very, very helpful. And finally, I'm grateful to the committee who worked on Resolution 36614 last year in case this statewide legislation did not pass. They were already making sure that there would be things in place. And for the children of Portland and for the children of the state of Oregon, we're glad the bill did pass. So finally, I'd like to call up Susan Rasmussen and Dr. Nancy Stevens from Kaiser Permanente. Susan is the manager for the Special Populations Program at Kaiser Permanente, and Dr. Nancy Stevens is director of the Community Benefits Program. And you stepped up even before the legislature passed their bill to say that Kaiser Permanente was ready to help the children of Multnomah County in public schools. So thank you so much. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your program?
Well, the child health program has really been one of the legs of the stool of the entire community benefit program. We offered the program in 2004, and help me with the numbers, with 100.
We started with nine schools and about 1,000 children.
And at that point, it was offered in Multnomah County alone. Since then, we've expanded to the Salem-Kaiser School District, and I think we're in about 350
85 schools.
Oh, the numbers thing, you know.
and about
6,000 students. So the reason that Kaiser Permanente is interested in doing this is not just making sure that children have insurance, but offering comprehensive care so that we don't have these children showing up in the emergency rooms, but we are able to treat them just like other dues-paying members, and we take care of their preventive, their acute, and their chronic care needs. So it's been a really successful program, and the partnerships that we've had with the MESD staff and with the Salem-Kaiser School District has just been outstanding.
What I'd like to just to echo on to what Nancy has shared, we, like she said, we started with nine schools and went to 385. We are now in Beaverton School District, Hillsborough School District, Clackamas School District, and then also Multnomah in Salem. I will say that I'd like to echo also on the thanks to everyone for making this happen. And mm-hmm. we work for a health plan, but I will tell you that this is one fabulous job that we have. Just the partnerships, again, that working with the schools and being able to provide the coverage to these children has just been amazing. We do plan on working very closely with the DMAP staff and also with the other state staff on continuing that partnership. So it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. It's good to have private partners.
I'd like to echo what Susan said about thanking you for this recognition and then also mentioning what a great job this is. In fact, Sam Adams was you introduced me. It was the opening of the yellow line over there at the Interstate campus. And when he introduced me, he said, let's see, Director of Community Benefit. What a great job title to get up every morning and say, gee, I wonder how I'm going to benefit the community today. and it's been our pleasure to do that.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there's already some information on my website about how people can sign up for the Kaiser program. There'll be more information about how to sign up for the state program. We'll be working with all of our partners to help get families signed up, and we greatly thank you very much.
Is there anyone else signed up on this resolution?
No one else signed up.
All right. Would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, I certainly appreciate how difficult it is to pass anything in the legislature. So I appreciate the balance and the effort and the fortitude and the long nights and weekends that it took to do this and all the other great things you guys did down in Salem. And I always watch closely. So it was with a little bit of almost wistfulness that I watched the majority work so well together down there. So I appreciate all that you've done. And the governor as well. He's been great on these issues. Aye.
Fritz? As a new immigrant 30 years ago, I was in nursing school and had to go to the emergency room because I didn't know how to find preventative care and had a condition that got so bad I had to go to the emergency room. And now I've been a registered nurse for 27 years and a mother for 23 years. And I am so happy that we are providing health care insurance and preventative coverage for all of Oregon's children. Thank you so much. We continue to be pioneers in health care and setting the standard for the United States. Aye.
Fish.
I have a 5-year-old son who in his first 5 years has had two major surgeries, one to restore his eyesight and the other one to enhance his hearing. And in each instance, we had health care through my wife's employer, Portland State University. So I have a particular connection to this issue, and the costs of both were just off the map. So it is with great pride that I join in thanking you for your great work. Amanda, thanks for bringing this forward. We don't frequently enough thank our partners in government for what they do. And to Mary and Mitch, I'd be remiss if I didn't say thanks for the heavy lifting on housing. Historic legislation on foreclosure, helping homeowners and renters. Historic legislation to give us a dedicated fund for housing. New lottery-backed bonds, so many other things. We could go on and on about all the things that benefit our state and our community. But you were doing the heavy lifting, so thank you. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
I, too, want to thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing forward this resolution, and it's, again, well-deserved. It seems like many, many months ago when Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Kogan, and myself met with Dr. Coodley and some of his supporters, and if you will all recall, he had the signatures ready to go to file. To enact more coverage for more youth in our local area. And he took a flyer and trusted us that we were going to do everything that we could, working with our partners in Salem, to get what he wanted done, not just for local youth, but for all youth in the state. And that was a flyer. We did not know if you failed, how we were going to fulfill our pledge, but we would have. I'm glad we don't have to, and I really want to laud you all for, and everyone that Commissioner Fritz mentioned and more, for your leadership. Very difficult times to take on what has got to be one of the hardest issues society faces right now, as our president is learning on a national level. So thank you. I also want to acknowledge Representative Tina Kotek, who had agreed to take on the local committee, working. I signed it to Commissioner Fritz when she was sworn in, but would have worked with Commissioner Fritz if we had to. Again, I'm really happy to recognize your great efforts. Aye. It is approved.
Thank you.
Could you please read the title for time certain item, Council Calendar Item 1000?
Adopt and implement the Hayden Island Plan and amend comprehensive plan map.
All right. Today, Council is acting to accept the substitute exhibit. We are not voting on the main motion. We are not voting on the underlying ordinance. That will, the second reading will be in a few weeks. But today we are making the changes that have been identified by Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Leonard, and myself. And Mr. Zinder will go through some of those changes for council consideration and any public testimony that we do have today. But again, we're voting on the substitute, and the main motion will be in a couple of weeks.
Great. Good afternoon, commissioners. If you'll bear with me a second, I'll lead you through quickly the list of amendments that we brought back for your consideration. If I can get this up. If what we'll be talking from today is, Mayor Adams said, is the substitute copy of the plan that was filed, and a summary of all the amendments that we'll be discussing is on page 4 of that document.
There we go.
Great. Sorry for the delay. So just actually going through the list that's at the bottom of page 4, the first item was a formatting change that's been made throughout the document, but items 2, 3, and 4 deal with a similar topic, which is to make clear that the plan itself does not endorse a new bridge or development on West Hayden Island, and to make it clear that that's subject to a separate process. We've added these comments to the text of the plan and reviewed them actually with the parties who raised the issue and also followed the recommendations of Commissioner Fritz. Item 5 in the list was to add the Office of Healthy and Working Rivers under the leadership component of the implementation items. On pages 34 and 35, we list the different actions, near-term and long-range actions that would take to implement the plan, and have added that office as an advocate and implementer of all of those various actions.
Just some minor typo. There's no "and" in the title of the office.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Item 6 dealt with the issue related to drive-throughs, restaurants, and drive-through facilities on Jansen Beach Drive. We've added to the text of the commentary, which explains the legislative intent of the ordinance and to the specific ordinance itself, provisions that make it clear that drive-through facilities are, even though the zoning classification is changed to CN2 and that there's the presence of a street classification that might typically not allow this, that access of drive-throughs from North Jansen Beach Drives will be allowed currently and into the future. And we've discussed this with the testifiers who raised this issue in the past, and they were satisfied with the content of the amendments. Item 7 deals with the manufactured home park. And there's a number of items here. First was the request from the owners of the manufactured home park that we consider a longer period for reestablishment of the park after a natural disaster. On page 69, we've made that change to the code and increased the period of time to reestablish the park to 15 years from 5 years. And again, this amendment was supported by the testifiers, the owners of the mobile, of the manufactured home community. Item 8 dealt with ensuring that when mobile homes, individual mobile homes are replaced on the site, it doesn't trigger upgrades that would typically be triggered if you were building a new residence, a new actual home on the location. And here, again, we added language to the commentary, which records the legislative intent to make it clear that removing and replacing an individual manufactured home unit is not intended and would not trigger those upgrades. And finally, again, with the manufactured home community, there's an issue about when and how additional noise standards, soundproofing standards, need to be implemented in the manufactured homes. And with the agreement of the manufactured home park owners who testified, we're going to address that issue as part of the Airport Futures Project, which is looking at the X overlay, the airport overlay in more detail. And then finally, not reflected on page 4, but one an amendment to the text of the plan itself, not to any of the zoning code, comprehensive plan, or any of the ordinances, was raised by the Audubon Society, who did testify to this at the last meeting, which was they were asking that we give more language in the plan vis-a-vis the recommendations regarding parks. So we're proposing to add to page 14, which is in the text of the plan itself, this statement regarding parks, repeating a point made elsewhere in the plan that Hayden Island lacks public park space, and that although we've identified some sites on the island that we think are good opportunities for the park, there's additional implementing actions that have to take place. So don't forget that just having on the map is not what it's going to take to actually deliver those parks. And that is the amendments that have been incorporated into the new document.
Discussions from council with Mr. Zinder. All right. Anyone signed up to testify?
We have one person signed up, Steve Morrison. Come on up.
Welcome, Mr. Morrison.
Thank you.
You just need to give us your first and last name. Please have a seat, and you'll have 3 minutes.
My name is Steve Morrison. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I own the property at 707 North Hayden Island Drive, otherwise known as the Waterside Condominium. We purchased this land some 7 years ago and built 84 residential units there and a marina. I'm here today for a number of reasons. I testified at the planning meeting for the island and was never contacted by anybody from planning staff or from city council about any of the future discussions. I would not have known about today's without my realtor informing me. I spoke with Alisanne Wetzel to start with, wrote a letter telling him I objected following my testimony. I followed up with another letter to Sue Parsons and the commissioners and the mayor and never received any contact back. I got a call yesterday afternoon from Joe Zinder, who just testified about this, told me what was going on. And as you can see from his testimony today, he has acknowledged the people that were there in the meetings and their concerns about their property, but none of mine.
Do you want to summarize your concerns for us? And the time you have, we'll give you a little bit more time.
Thank you. They were as follows. We are CG. We are happy as general commercial right now. We're conforming in that use. We don't know what will happen when this rezoned to residential, affecting us, and what might happen in the future with the economy the way it is and the technology the way it is. Who knows what may happen on sites that are right now simply residential, and the marina, the same situation. We're happy being there as we are. We're not an island. We're contiguous to and adjoining the property to the west of us, which is the hotel, and they are remaining as general commercial. So we're not creating any kind of an island there. We want to just keep our options open in respect to that. And we also raise concern about the walking path we built out in front of our property. It's very pretty. It's landscaped with 2 acres of landscaping surrounding it. We let the general public walk down. They walk from the hotel, from our neighbors. And it's proposed in the proposal that it be a bicycle path. And there are areas that this path, not on our site, which is 10 feet wide, drop down into the neighborhood of 3 to 4 feet wide. This is extraordinarily dangerous. We have people, old people, people with dogs, people with grandchildren daily walking along this beautiful area on the riverbank. And I was never contacted about even that little issue. So that's our concerns. And I didn't have an attorney out there. I testified. I could have gotten one stomp my feet, like Joe Angel, but
so
I didn't.
Your two concerns are the zoning and the requirements regarding access in the path on your property or on other people's properties?
Well, I would assume that our property and other people's properties, that we've kind of connected them to make it a route around the entire island.
So what is your specific concern on the
path? I don't think it should be a bicycle path. It should not be for bicycle traffic.
It should be for?
Pedestrian.
Pedestrian only. Okay.
Pedestrian only.
Are there any other concerns? I think we've captured the zoning and the path usage. Anything
nope.
else?
That's okay. Basically it. And I'm chagrined and wanted to let you know that they just left us out of this process, they being the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And I didn't see your letter. I'm sorry about that. So could you tell me why it's a residential property. Why are you concerned about changing the zoning from commercial to residential?
Well, I know what I can do on a commercial piece of property now because we bought it and read that. But I don't know what the rezoning is going to do to our use of the property and what restrictions we would have in the future. As I said, the internet technology and what's going on, some little business might want to set up in our building. We've had residents that say, hey, how about a beauty salon or a nail salon in there? We've had people contacting us about possibly having a summer cabana down in the marina to have drinks or food during the summertime. We have parking. I'm sure the city will point out to you that it's not a public marina, but we do have parking on our street. It's a private street for 20 vehicles for the waterside and guests. And we have hundreds of neighbors within walking distance to the marina. And I just don't know how it will affect us. So we just want to be left alone.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll look into it.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Zender, do you want to, or Mr. Gillum, do you want to give us your perspective on those issues? Zoning on this particular piece of property and use of the path for bikes?
Yes. Sort of orient you to the property that we're talking about, the Waterside Condominium, this is the concept plan, is located right here with a pointer on the north side of the island next to the existing hotel. And on the concept plan, you know, the idea was to promote residential development on either end of the island to concentrate the larger commercial use around where the Jackson Beach Shopping Center is, and actually over the long term phase that into a more residential use, and to turn this area on the east side of the freeway into a more neighborhood serving retail area. So concentrating the retail commercial uses into those areas was a big part of the overall strategy or concept for the island. And the other thing to remember, just in general, too, is that we were dealing with an island that had this transportation constraint. There's only so much development that can go on the island because of the limitations on the freeway. So we actually had to consider how best to deploy the commercial uses that we were going to allow on the island when we were forecasting our transportation budget, really. So for these properties, the condominiums that were just in question and other properties actually on the this end of the island, we, in the plan, examined how they were actually developed, what level of residential development was there in terms of density and height and the like, and created a zoning pattern that rezoned the properties, the residential properties here on the east, to a category that matched what they were, and actually with a little headroom as well, but that aligned with
the way the properties were developed. And as you heard, the waterside condominiums were just recently developed. So it's a brand new, very attractive residential project. So the property in question, you can see, was general commercial under the previous map and has been rezoned to R3, matching up with a number of other residential developments around it that are R3. And the difference here between these different zones really was just to match what level, what intensity they were developed at today.
So the 84 units is actually at the R3 level?
Yeah. Yeah,
and what kinds of commercial uses are allowed in an R3 zone?
R3 does not allow commercial uses. So the kind of uses, so in the thinking of the plan, the concept plan here is that the kind of uses that might be developed on that site, we would love to see happen in this neighborhood commercial area, because that's, in the long run, what this area was intended to become. Neighborhood-serving uses. Nail salon's a perfect example, but that kind of small personal service or other retail use. What's there today, we know, is different. It's a Safeway. It's some of these drive-through uses. But in the long run, the difference between this side of the freeway and the other was that we're trying to move this to be more of that neighborhood center. The zoning was designed to accommodate that. The street plan looks forward to a time when that could be possible as well. So the change does eliminate the kind of flexibility of the site to go to a commercial use. However, we've provided an alternative location within easy walking distance that we were really trying to capture the market area and the energy to help promote it as a neighborhood serving commercial use. The other thing to consider is that this would be a very large CG site. Whereas it's a great residential development today, it could be a commercial development, the way zoning works. We have to look at sort of the hypothetical future. And if we were to reconsider the zoning of this property, it could potentially raise issues for Oregon Department of Transportation and this overall transportation budget issue that I discussed earlier. We'd have to go back and take a look at how we are within the overall capacity of the interchange.
And does the ODOT concerns get triggered by the zoning decisions we make or by development applications?
Their primary concern would be in adopting this plan. So it would, if we adopt this plan, then it's presumed that the transportation issues with ODOT has been addressed. So it would not occur on a development basis.
Right. The land use change in the plan is the trigger that the state has jurisdiction over in this case.
But it's currently CG, so it had capacity presumably when it was just built.
Well, the original zoning predates the state transportation planning rule, so that's, you know, the situation has changed since it was originally created. The original zoning also came from just mapping what the Multnomah County zoning was on the island when we first brought it in. So I don't know that it was ever really considered in terms of the state transportation planning rule.
And it was, Mr. Morrison said he testified about this at the Planning Commission. Did the commission have discussion on this particular site?
You know, I can't remember specific discussion of the request, although we did go through the whole list of all the amendments. So they must have, Commissioner, because we go through all the list of all the testimony and amendments. And the Planning Commission did not, you know, find the argument compelling. They bought into the concept plan and what it was trying to accomplish and did not take up an amendment to change the zoning back to CG.
And I understand. Sorry.
Well, if I could just, sorry to interject, was it discussed as part of the process with the citizens?
I believe it was. I'd have to go back and check the record. The way we do that is there's the hearing, there's questions, and then all of those different requests and amendments are brought back at the next meeting, similar to here. So I'm pretty confident that it was addressed.
Well, given that it was just built, so it's not like we're expecting a huge commercial development to go in there, was there any discussion of allowing the kinds of small uses that Mr. Morrison raised?
There was not. I think there's a. There was not.
Live work. Live work as an option.
Yeah, well, live work, but you know the little cabana, because the commercial that's on the other side in that area is not right on the water, right?
There's a number of issues that
considering commercial use, especially of the marina, would raise. For instance, the marina itself is for residents to use. It's an accessory use and was approved through the environmental review as an accessory use for the residential unit. If it were a commercial marina, it would have to provide parking. It would have had to provide other things that it didn't. It's an accessory use. So every step we make towards more commercial use of the marina itself gets us in a territory where we may need to reconsider even how, if it's being used for a purpose that it wasn't permitted for in the first place. These little bitty, this is a plan district we're creating, so there's the ability to take an R3 and, you know, allow a certain level of retail use in there that's sort of accessory. The Planning Commission and staff typically tries to avoid that kind of exception because we use the R3 district all across the city, and we're just careful to not set precedent that would be difficult for us to not have to apply elsewhere where it would be less appropriate.
So, Joe, one of the just things I'm struggling with is, in our last hearing, we had lots of people come forward with concerns, and we've addressed them all in this document, with as noted. And some of them were substantive, some of them were stylistic, other things, but you had a chance to sort of work through them, negotiate with the various parties. The thing I'm trying to, on the fly here, understand is, couple of issues have been raised, one procedurally about notice and engagement, and two about substance. And, I mean, I would ask my colleagues, do we have enough information to actually address this, or is this something that ought to be first discussed at a staff level with a recommendation to us? I ask that out of complete ignorance, not to suggest.
Let's start with, if we could have staff answer first, and then we can answer for ourselves. Do you feel through this process adequately considered this issue? Mr. Morrison says no.
You know, just from a staff position, I think that we believe that the commercial uses should be in the neighborhood center. Like, there's only so much market on, there's only so many shoppers on Hayden Island, and to concentrate that use in the area where we're trying to create that neighborhood retail center seems to make the most sense to us. You know, mixed use is something that we promote in general all over the city, you know, especially in the central city. But what you have on West Hayden, on Hayden Island, are residential areas. And so this is more akin to a traditional residential neighborhood with a little commercial area that supports it. This is not the Pearl. So I think believe that the concept plan and supporting the ends of the concept plan is the right thing to do.
Council, do you feel like you have an information?
I'd like to respond to Commissioner Fisher's question. Yeah. And I'm troubled that the testifier participated at the Planning Commission yet did not get notice for our hearing a couple of weeks ago. And so the purpose of having this public hearing is so the public can come in and ask for amendments and comment. So I'd like some more, at the very least, I'd like some more information before the final vote about what happened on this particular site and what the consideration was.
Commissioner Lynn?
Well, I mean, I guess I have to ask about that. I mean, it's one thing to say you didn't get noticed. It's another thing to actually have notice sent out. Is that accurate?
You know, I need to go back. It would surprise me, since notice goes out to anyone who signs up for testimony, that we did not send out notice. But I can pull the record and look to confirm that notice was sent out. But that's to actually have filed testimony with the Planning Commission is pretty, I'm pretty sure you get on the list and we provide you with notice, but I will double check.
And I guess more substantively to Commissioner Fisher's point, I am uncomfortable on the fly changing something, particularly in light of a more what I would consider a thoughtful process of the staff trying to have consistency in how we apply zoning. And having worked out there for 5 years, and I'm familiar with the project and where it's at, there is a real need to have a clear separation from commercial areas and residential areas on the island. If it's confused enough as it is today, in any attempt to more clearly delineate those lines will enhance the livability of the people that live on the island. So I think from a policy level, I appreciate the approach, but from a practical level as well, just knowing the island and how it works makes sense to me.
Commissioner Fritz?
There were two other questions that came in between the last hearing and this one that I wanted to ask for your clarification. We had a letter asking to keep the zoning as CG instead of changing it to CN. That's above and beyond the changes to the drive-throughs and the accessways that we've made in response to what we heard last time. So I was wondering if you could just elaborate again how that issue was discussed in the community and why CN was selected instead of CG on the in the commercial areas.
Sure. And that letter was referring to this neighborhood commercial area on the east side of the freeway, the area that we discussed earlier with amendments regarding the drive-throughs. The level of development, and I've already talked about what the concept is of what we're trying to accomplish there. And when you read the purpose of the CN zone, it really is that kind of residential area. It's even auto-oriented. You know, it's not storefront, but it's smaller. It's smaller. It's typically got less lot coverage. It's more oriented in sort of the scale and type of use to neighborhood serving retail, and that's what the purpose of this area was. It allows all the uses that are there today, especially now that we've given that sort of concession to the drive-thrus. Actually, the level of development of the lots there, it allows a lot more lot coverage than's actually built there today. A CG would allow 85% lot coverage. A CN allows 65%. And the sites are developed in the 20% range. So there's a lot of development potential still within the CN. So one of the purposes of it is it affects the size and sort of the layout a bit, and also signals to a would-be developer what the intent is of this district. So if you're looking to be big retail, we've got other sites on the island that we think are the preferred choice. This one, we're trying to send the signal in part of what it's supposed to be.
Thank you. And then my final question is, I heard some concern about the 80-foot height allowance in certain areas, and there's a reduction in setback to natural areas in conjunction with the height allowance. Can you tell me some more about that?
I'm not exactly sure which specific site that's referring to.
I wasn't either, but there seems to be an area of an 80-foot height that's in close proximity to the east end of the island.
Oh, yes. This is, it would be, this residential area on the very eastern tip of the island. And it's a set of townhomes. This was part of the area that typically would not have been allowed to be developed residentially, but we think it's the best use, and so that's the amendments that are in the plan regarding the noise overlay to transfer units around. Planning Commission did discuss this actually in some detail and pushed to have a greater setback incorporated into the plan, as well as public access along this part of the waterfront here. I don't remember off the top of my head, Commissioner, the specific numbers, but that actually was addressed in Planning Commission's discussions. There was no, the way that they chose to address the issue was to require a little bit more setback, require more public access, informal public access along that, shared access along that waterfront.
So 25 feet was actually more than was originally proposed?
I believe it was,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
So if the council is amenable, why don't we go ahead and pass the suggested amendments between now and when does this come back to council, Carla?
I believe we decided on the morning of the 29th, next Wednesday.
Oh, next Wednesday, not a couple of weeks. So between now and Wednesday, if you would do, there are two substantive issues, the zoning and the path. And if you could also do some forensic work on the process concerns raised, and if there is a problem with the process, how do we address it in terms of getting Mr. Morrison's request in front of folks that have provided and can provide us some advice?
Sure.
In response to his request. So we will tentatively put this for next week. We'll extend it further if we have to. In the meantime, is there a... I move the amendments. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any testimony on the amendments? Further testimony? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I'm really proud to be on a council and with staff who are so amenable to amendments, making things better, constantly looking to address citizens' concerns. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Well, this is this has never been an easy project.
the started with a six-month development moratorium in October 2006 in response to a request for a big box development that would have choked off whatever remaining capacity we have and whatever remaining hours on I-5. Since that time, I've been sued, and the residents have persevered, and we're making progress. So we'll continue to work on these details, and for those of you residents in the room, we will get it done. Aye. Amendment is approved. Council item moves to next week's agenda tentatively. I need to... we approved 1,004, and I need to actually send it back to my office, so I need to have reconsideration of council calendar item 1,004.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, would you, any discussion on reconsideration? Carla, would you please call the roll?
We need four.
104.
To reconsider.
One problem that we have, Mayor, is while Commissioner Leonard is gone, we only have three, and that's a... It's because it was a consent agenda item, I believe we need four.
And we'll wait.
Okay.
We're going to suspend consideration of the motion to reconsider and move on to the regular agenda, which, Carla, can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, council calendar item 1017?
Amend contract with Portland Streetcar, Inc., to provide additional professional services for project management and financial planning services related to the construction of the Portland Streetcar Loop project.
This is a policy direction today, and it authorizes the Bureau of Transportation to commence preparation of the local improvement district for the Northrop Loop, which is another extension of the Portland Streetcar Loop project. It's probably our shortest single extension of the streetcar, but it's supported by the neighborhood as it provides greater access and connections in the neighborhood, including a new bike facility on Marshall, providing a low traffic option for cyclists and reducing the conflicts between streetcar and cars. The Northrop Loop option costs $1.7 million more than the base option considered for the loop. The additional cost is proposed to be paid through $700,000 from project funds, $500,000 from PDC River District tax increment funds, and $500,000 net proceeds from the proposed LID. The LID is a one-time assessment on property surrounding the proposed construction of the Northrop Loop. Who is going to go first? Ms. Deedy.
You bet. We were going to take the two items together. Is that what you'd like to do?
The second item.
Yeah, that was the second item.
All right. Must be on the other page. Can you also read council calendar item resolution number 1018?
Mm-hmm. Declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct multimodal improvements for the Northrop Loop streetcar alignment.
Now, Ms. Deedy.
Okay. For the record, I'm Vicki Deedy with the Bureau of Transportation, and I'm the city's project manager for Portland Streetcar. The first item before you is the amendment to the City Portland Streetcar, Inc. Contract. The last time we were at council, which was on June 10th, we anticipated that we would have a project construction grant agreement signed, sealed, and delivered by about the 1st of September. And I believe I even had kind words for them. Now it would appear that September 30th is the magic date, and meeting that goal requires the FTA to submit information to Congress by July 30th, which starts a 60-day review period in the Congress. So we will keep on top of that over the next several days to make sure that we do everything we can to make that happen. So what this amendment with PSI does is it provides some interim project management services and some interim funding. Basically, it adds $300,000 to the contract and extends the time period to September 30th so that we can continue to work on the utility relocations, monitoring of the track procurement process, and completing other steps needed to bring the main body of the construction contract back here in October.
Questions from council? Do you want to show them your map?
That's for the LID.
We're doing both. Do you have, you're continuing now?
I will continue unless there are questions, or we can take them at the end.
Questions from council?
I just have a really basic question. This is connected with the east side coming over. The reason we're doing this is because we're already figuring out how things get around.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the map will show you how it connects to the east side and the two options that we looked at in the choice of making the Northrop one that we think is the right thing to do.
So it's not just that we thought, well, the streetcar, it currently goes somewhere near here, and we want it to just do a different kind of turn. Thank you.
Okay. The resolution of intent, this whole process started with a meeting with the Pearl District Neighborhood Association Transportation Committee back on September 20th of 2007. And at the